Hey folks, Pat Whalen here, your host for this podcast episode, my conversation with lead investigative reporter for the Chicago Tribune, as well as the author of the new book, new in quotes, The City is Up for Grabs, How Lori Lightfoot Led and Lost a City in Crisis. I did that with no notes. I did not need to look. Isn't that amazing? Is it a mouthful? Yes, it is. Is it an accurate descriptor of the book as well? Yes, it is. Obviously, we talk about the city under the tenure of Mayor Lightfoot. Chicago City Council, parallels between the Johnson administration, and I never asked him if he would drink some Malort, though. I do regret that, so we'll have to have him back on. But in the meantime, please enjoy my interview with Greg Pratt, won't you? At the Wiener Circle. That's fun.
Okay, everybody. Live from Wiener Circle, it's Good Evening with Pat Whalen.
Pat Whalen. I am Pat Whalen. Thank you so much for being here at the Wieners Reagan? What's this place called? The motherfucking Wiener Circle. We will bleep all that in post because this is a podcast. I know it looks like a live show to you here, our live audience. Just for our listening audience, can you just assert yourselves and do a little more yelling and clapping? We love that. We love an empowered audience here at Good Evening with Pat Whalen. I am Pat Whalen, as mentioned before. This is the Wiener Circle. I'm very excited to welcome our guests in not too short an order, but before I do, for you live and listening, please know that I like to give the Venmo before the monologue and the interview in case you don't like them. So that Venmo, again, is at Best Evening Ever. This is a good evening. How good is it? It's the best evening ever. That's great. Unprompted, like trained seals. That's a reference. More on that in a bit. Yeah, thank you so much for being here at the Wiener Circle. That's the third plug. That's three, Reagan. Deal's a deal. I really enjoy this place. The second time, a repeat offender here at the Wiener Circle. Again, we'll be talking to Greg Pratt in not too short an order, author of The City's Up for Grabs, How Lori Lightfoot Led and Lost a City in Crisis. Off the dome. I'm prepared. I'm prepared. I don't know if you heard, yesterday a flight was leaving O'Hare and a passenger noticed that there was smoke coming out of one of the motors on the wing. And they pointed that out to the cabin crew. And then the guy in the back went, "Fine," said the hitman Boeing hired to be on the plane with them. That's a fun joke. Here's another one. There's another billionaire going to the bottom of the ocean in a very tiny submarine. That's gonna happen again. Yes, we love the billionaire submarines. This one, though, it's a little different. Sponsored by FanDuel, which is interesting. Because, oh man, it's too soon. Too soon. But there's a great parlay if there's an orca involved in any way. So we should talk after the show. It should be interesting. Here we got to breeze through the top here because this is a podcast and we want to get to the good stuff, and that's the interview with Greg. I don't know if you saw recently a congresswoman from the state of Connecticut put a bill on the floor of United States Congress and said that Connecticut has the best pizza in the country. No, that's okay. It all evens out. Because I think Jan Schakowsky, a local congresswoman, has submitted a bill also that is going to make law that Chicago is the most boring state in New England. So that all evens out. We have a great show for you tonight. I swear to God we do. We have an interview with investigative reporter for the Chicago Tribune and Little Village native Greg Pratt. If you're not familiar, the book, again, The City's Up for Grabs by Greg Pratt. I really did read it. And I'd be remiss if I was the only one to interview you who didn't say it read like a fiction book. And what that means is that it is exciting. It is a fairly quick read. It's not very dense. Why this book? Why now?
Well, you know, I was going for a romance novel, but she lost. So, you know,
she did. She used to like you.
She did used to like me. And you know what? And we can get into that later. But, you know, I still like her. At least parts of me like parts of her. But that's not a romance novel thing.
This is the Wiener Circle, but take it easy. Take it easy, live audience. I have this consent decree because this is the copy of the consent decree I had when I interviewed her at Steppenwolf Theater Company, name drop, when she was just a lowly head of the police board, and I plucked her from obscurity and was off to the races. And that's just, that's how I do it. And that's fine. But that is to say, I do not dislike her. I think she made difficult policy decisions. I think that maybe her personality wasn't great for the role. But is this a hit piece, I guess, is what I'm getting at. Is this just something that's like, the mayor's gone. Let's talk smack. Why this book? What's it really about?
It's a hit piece. No, that's going to... she's going to clip that out of context and have a lot of fun with that. Actually, there are people who have read the book who talk about how she doesn't look all that bad. And there are things in there that I talk about that she did quite well, like making sure that black and brown people got vaccinated after the vaccine and putting a lot of energy into making sure that vulnerable, skeptical people were getting vaccinated, which is important work that she did. It wasn't all bad. It wasn't all dissing on the Italians. And so,
right.
You know, I wanted to write a book about Mayor Lightfoot from the moment that I got the job in April of 2019. And I thought that it would be an eventful 4 years no matter what. And, you know, it turned out to be a very, very eventful 4 years, and not just because she's entertaining, but we had COVID, we had the riots. And so I wanted to put it into context and try to make sense of it for history. And then sometimes as a reporter, if I'm being honest with you, we get something, we're like, wow, this shit is just too good not to put down on paper.
And it was. You know, it's interesting you say that, because so often on the many podcast interviews I've done on my podcast, which you're all on now here at the Wiener Circle, name drop again, I ask, you know, what was COVID like? Because it was a difficult period for most people in their jobs. And you talk about in the book how it was really one of her times to shine. Now, I want to get into more about the mayor, and if you still call her the mayor after the fact. I don't know if you know that. I don't. Does anyone? Is it like senator or doctor?
Usually people do that as a sign of respect.
Okay. Well, her honor, and we will talk about her, but a little more about you, because I know you as a reporter. I know you as a cool dude and a Twitter personality and an author. But you're from Chicago. You're born in Chicago. You're born in Little Village. You grew up in Chicago. You became a reporter for the biggest paper in town. I mean, what was it like growing up in Little Village? How'd you get into journalism?
Well, I was always very nosy, which may surprise you. And that's the first step to reporting. And the difference between being a writer and a reporter is that the writer is curious and the reporter is nosy. And so, you know, I was very much about, let's get into what's going on, what's happening, why is it happening? I like to go out and truthfully, I'm personally kind of shy. And people don't always believe that, but it's true. I'm personally very shy. If you drop me off here as the author and as the reporter, I can do that. If you drop me off here at a party with a bunch of people I've never met, I'm fucked.
And not in the Wiener Circle sense. I understand that, but it's so interesting that you say that in terms of being shy, because I have seen you operate in press corps situations, press conference situations, and I mean, even especially, perhaps, with Mayor Lightfoot, very combative, assertive, I would say, yet always very respectful. That's why I'm kind of interested in your background, because you are someone who has said in interviews about this book, I do my research, that you believe in civility, you believe in politeness. It's something that you believe in. Why?
Well, you know, there are people who need to get their ass kicked sometimes, and that's something you learn in Little Village. You know, you learn that most problems should be solved with people getting together, but every once in a while you have to slap somebody upside the head. And that's absolutely true. It's a tricky thing, you know. When is it acceptable to slap someone upside the head? You know it when the opportunity presents itself. As an example, in politics, Mayor Lightfoot slapped Ed Burke, Alderman Ed Burke, upside his head at the first city council meeting they had together, where he was trying to flex on her and disrupt. And he's,
excuse me, Greg, if I may cut you off. I've read the book that you wrote, and I think what you meant to say is that Alderman Ed Burke was interested in using the correct gender-appropriate pronouns in the city code. So, is that not correct?
So Alderman Burke was interested...
Ed Burke is woke, that's what I'm saying.
...in... when he's not allegedly Jew-hating, which is something the feds alleged about him.
We'll get to John Cass later. Keep going.
When Ed Burke was messing with her, with pretending to care about gender-neutral rules and blah, 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 and she knocked him down. That's okay. Ed Burke was what he was at that point. He was facing criminal charges. That's all right. The problem is when somebody says good morning to you and they don't smile enough and you slap them, that's an inappropriate slap. And that's the problem that Mayor Lightfoot had, is that she didn't know when to slap and not to slap. But, you know, that's something I learned in Little Village.
Fair enough. All right, there's that background question. But, just one more. I'm going to push you on this. I mean, you grew up here. I mean, you worked in Tribune Tower before it was apartments, I assume.
Yes.
You did your...
We had enormous cockroaches, which I hope haunt the rich people who live there now.
They're paying exorbitant rent prices, actually, those cockroaches. But so it goes, I suppose. I want to ask later about your role in the union and your role as a journalist. But, why this book, why now? Another way to put that is, why is there not a book like this about Mayor M. Daley? Or perhaps, what's his name? Rahm Emanuel. He works in Japan now. You know this guy?
I've heard of him.
Yeah. I mean, he's a bombastic guy. He's pretty dramatic. He's got a lot of interesting stories. He lost part of his finger in a meat slicer. Why is there no book about him?
I think there should be a book about every mayor every 4 years, something for the historical record. There's at least a couple good ones about Harold Washington. There's a bunch of great ones about the first Mayor Daley. There isn't really one about the second Mayor Daley. There isn't a good one about Rahm Emanuel. There's a polemic book called Mayor 1%, which is fine, but it's more of a criticism type of thing than an actual history. I joke, and I'm not quite joking, that I want to write a book about Mayor Johnson. And, you know, maybe my Sisyphean punishment is going to be writing a book about Chicago mayors every 4 years, which, you know, could be a lot of fun, and maybe not so much fun. But I just think that this is something we should do, and I'm surprised that, you know, for instance, I think that my friend at the Sun-Times, Fran Spielman, should write a book about everything.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because I've also heard you say that when you first started as a beat reporter, you're now an investigative reporter of the Chicago Tribune, when you started as a beat reporter, the joke and the rumor is that Fran Spielman, whose podcast is worth a listen, had the place bugged, and that you wanted to get to that point. So how do you do that? Because when I look, and I don't mean like Tribune Tower bugged, I mean like actual like recording devices, federal government, shout out to the federal government. Fans of the show, friends of the show, federal government.
You know, we have at least one former AUSA in the House.
They work at the Wiener Circle.
So did I want to bug the place? Yes, I did. Did I successfully bug the place? Yes, I did. Mayor Lightfoot was obsessed with people bugging, actually, and she once lied to Ray Lopez. She had her staff tell him, he came up for a meeting, and she had her staff lie to him and tell him that they take everybody's phone, but they just took his phone because they didn't trust him, you know? And I remember when I was reporting the book, I saw Alderman Lopez at a event, and I said, hey, quick question. Remember when they told you that you had to turn in your phone and everybody does it? And his face kind of shrunk a little, and he said, they don't do that for everybody, do they?
That's not true. They did it for me. I never thought I would get a crowd who went aw for Alderman Raymond Lopez. So I got to say, it's a lot of firsts here tonight. You got to feel for the guy. But she was also concerned about the Russians, as I understand.
She was interested in the Russians, yes.
Shout out to the federal government, again, doing stuff about the Russians. We know that. And her background as a prosecutor, I mean, that's where this hard edge of hers comes from that you write so much about in the book. Because, again, I can name drop her all day long, but the fact of the matter is when I had her on at Steppenwolf and she was the head of the police board, she was a police reform interested candidate. And sometime around when Rahm dropped out of the race, she became a different type of candidate. But she always held up against President Preckwinkle that she was in the race before Rahm dropped out, which was the big deal. Was that a question, yes or no?
No, but, you know, jumping in when Rahm was still in the race is something that she deserves real respect for. That's not an easy task. I mean, Rahm Emanuel can raise infinite amounts of money, and, you know, that's something I always admired about her. She had a fighter's heart, you know. She may not have had the actual fist of a fighter, but she had a heart for it, you know, and there were people who were like, I'm going to run against her, and then chickened out and talked all this shit and then didn't do anything about it. Shout out to Lori Lightfoot for being willing to take on Goliath.
I also shout out Lori Lightfoot for being willing to take on Goliath and doing my show twice and refusing Malort twice. That does remind me, Greg. We have a tradition on the show. We'll get to it later. In terms of there's no cicadas in this one unless you brought some. I don't have any on me. In terms of the journalism aspect, you shout out Fran Spielman. You also shout out Carol Marine, who was there in the building. It was a big deal to see Carol Marine. This is in the chapter Butcher Paper, which, of course, is about Ed Burke when they put up butcher paper on the windows of his office, which feels like a metaphor of some kind. Shout out to Ed Burke and the federal government again. And so I want to ask you, as a guy who was the president, I believe, of the Tribune Guild, and I think we might have a current Tribune Guild president in the audience tonight, journalism seems important. I like what I do better. But it does seem important. What is the state of journalism? Is your book journalism? Do we need it? Greg Pratt.
Yes and yes. The state of the industry is bad. You know, I was joking with one of my former colleagues here. They asked, how's it going at the Tribune? I said, well, it's a great place to do work, and it's a terrible place to work. And you have institutions that are struggling financially, that are struggling with a lot of pressures and resources, but that do a lot of important work. And so that part is satisfying. But, you know, everybody here, you should support your favorite bars, your favorite concert venues, and you should be supporting at least one local media outlet.
That's truth. That's the truth. And I personally shout out Carol Marine. There is so much in the book, Craig. Oh, my God. There's just too much. There's a few things I want to ask about specifically. What do you got?
Does it help if I tell you that I wrote it all in crayon?
Did you really?
Yeah.
What color?
All of them.
Journalism. Journalism.
You have to be resourceful.
You're a FOIA wizard, I believe, is the answer. And like, while you can bug the place, and that's all well and good, the true sense of it is that you establish relationships, which we can talk more about in the second half of the interview, of how you assert that Mayor Lightfoot was not able to do. This is a large part of your job, how you're able to get people to talk to you consistently, be honest with you about how they're feeling, what they're going through. How does that work? How do you do that? I understand it's your job. I understand that you're very good at it. Not just in the book, but, you know, in your columns and in your investigative pieces. It's kind of a broad question, but it's really, I mean, personally fascinating to me that you can just ask people questions and they'll give you your honest answer. It's something I find very difficult in daily life.
Well, sometimes I ask them the questions and they give me dishonest answers. And that happens a lot, too, especially when you're dealing with some elected officials. When it comes to, I've had a lot of success as a reporter, and that sounds like an asshole thing to say, so I apologize for that. The success I've had as a reporter in the South Suburbs, downtown, and at City Hall, and hopefully going forward, is I'm pretty direct and not abrasive. You know, there was a guy I beat up a lot in 2014 and 2015 in Tinley Park, and he's like, you know, Greg, you're very gentle and bright, but you have absolutely destroyed me. And I said, you know, well, I don't know what to say. Thank you. And he was actually a pretty good mayor.
That was a clue.
But I'm pretty direct. You know, look, I'm interested in what you're doing, why you're doing it, how you're doing it, because I genuinely want to understand. And so, you know, I want to understand why, you know, there were days during the 2023 mayor's race, I'm talking to Brandon Johnson and I'm talking to Paul Vallis in the same day, sometimes within the same hours. And they're very different people, and you have to be able to have a conversation with them, right? And then you have staffers, and you have consultants, and you have people biting the heads off of chickens, which is half of the political theater. And
I thought you meant literally.
Sometimes literally.
Okay.
And in the back of certain candidates' vans. But the some weird shit happens in Chicago politics. No, so there's a... And there's one guy over here with, he's like, what?
He's That's like, me, Greg. Hi, I'm Pat Whalen.
So I just try to be direct. If it's a bad story, I'll tell you, hey, this isn't looking good, or how, help me understand it, you know? I don't sneak up on people, which people do appreciate. It's just having a fair, honest approach to, you know, you might be drowning in the ocean, but I want to know what the salt tastes like.
It tastes like a chicken head, I guess. You know, a couple things about that. You mentioned Mayor Johnson, and I'm looking forward to your book about him and his administration, but there was one part of your book that had to do with Alderman Beal and Alderman Wagasback trying to basically come up with a way. I mean, we had a vacuum, right? We had Rahm, we had the Dailies, we had very strong mayors. We had Jane Byrne, who we have to say was also a woman and also only got one term. And I think there might be something to that. And I don't think it's because of their gender. Men are pigs. And what Alderman Beal and Alderman Wagasback were trying to do was to basically be assertive on the city council and decide for the mayor who the committee chairs were going to be. Now, something similar happened under the Johnson administration very early on. I think Alderman Wagasback was the head of finance under Mayor Lightfoot. A lot of people wonder about how that all came to be. But the question is, does the vacuum remain? Is the council empowered? These are questions that people are asking right now in terms of aldermanic power. And I wonder how much of Mayor Lightfoot's experiences during COVID had to do with these types of patterns that we're seeing now.
Well, the culture of the Chicago City Council is first and foremost, the biggest caucus on the City Council is the "what does the mayor want me to do" caucus. The second biggest caucus is the "what's in it for me" caucus. These two caucuses are very closely related. And that culture, it changes, it goes up and down, you have some different conflicts, but that is primarily the culture. And the thing with the aldermen picking their own committee chairs is wild. There are not a lot of legislatures in this country where the executive picks who is the leader of the legislative branch, who leads this and that. Governor Pritzker does not get to pick the Speaker of the Illinois House. He does not get to pick the President of the Illinois Senate. Mayor Johnson does. He gets to pick the aldermen solely because that is the culture of deference that they've established. And, you know, that's a really good example of where our government fails. And it's not necessarily that the alderman and the mayor, whoever it is, need to hate each other, but they need to be working together seriously. They need to be checks and balancing each other. And we're a city without checks and balance. And that's one of the problems. And so right now, you know, Mayor Johnson has different levels of opposition and discontent, which so did Mayor Lightfoot. They're both able to navigate it because most of the time, the aldermen can't get on the same page, you know? Like the conservative whites will be on one page and they'll join with a certain amount of more conservative Black caucus members, and then the lakefront saves them, you know? The Latinos save them. They're just not able to coalesce in any meaningful sense. But to the extent that... I love you to death, but to the extent that there was a question about that, I think that is my answer about the culture there.
I would argue that there are plenty of checks being written, but maybe not a lot of balance. Thank you so much. The other anecdote before I ask you about when Rahm met with Mayor Lightfoot and said, warned her about the school board, which is a story I'll let you tell. And I don't want to give too much away of the book because it really is that good. And I mean, I barely know my ass from a hole in the ground. I enjoyed this book immensely. That's my wife. Thank you. But it was also Alderman Villegas who, when I think Mayor Lightfoot said, well, I have to make this decision based on the Native American population in the city of Chicago. And Alderman Villegas said, good luck with that caucus. This is bullshit. So that's just a tiny piece I will give you. But the real question is about when Mayor Lightfoot, because while we're talking about power, the balance of power, who holds power, how, why, there's also the issue of trust, which is a large part of the book and your portrayal of Mayor Lightfoot. She ran, of course, on the elected school board, and in meeting after she won with Mayor Emanuel, they spoke about the elected school board. I'll let you tell the rest, Greg Pratt.
She said, I love the elected school board, and we need to keep it. No, that is not true. So,
see, I read the book, so that's funny.
And I'll back up just a tiny bit. So one of the things that ROMS people used to talk about, and Kim Fox and Lori Lightfoot had been friends before Mayor Lightfoot was anything in politics, before when Lori Lightfoot was just a rich corporate lawyer who occasionally did stuff. And I don't mean that as a knock. It's just the social circles she was in till like 2015, whatever. And so she becomes friends with, she had known Kim Fox. They were sort of friendly. When she starts running for mayor, Kim Fox comes to visit Lori in her campaign office, just hanging out, you know, girls talking and ladies talking, good friends. I'm going to get myself in trouble for that.
We're recording this.
I think that the state's attorney at least understands the good faith of that statement. But they were there as friends. They were just chatting. And one of Rahm's right-hand people, David Spielfogel, calls Kim Fox and he says, hey, I need you to know she's crazy. And, you know, she's like, what do you mean? And he's like, yeah, you can't trust her. And the reason for that is that he had brought her into her office in 2017 and said, are you running for mayor? And he was going to reappoint her to the police board. And she said, no. 3 weeks later, she registered LightfootForChicago.com. And, you know, the appearance of the things like the police board, which is an institution at the time that didn't have a lot of credibility and that struggled with credibility, you don't want that being politicized with, are she pulling a punch because she's appealing to the 19th Ward? Is she throwing punches because she's appealing to the 35th Ward? You just can't really have that in a position like that. So Rahm isn't quite being an asshole there, you know? I think he has a real good faith reason to ask that question. She says, no, she's running. 3 weeks later, she registers the website. So she runs on an elected school board promise. She says, I'm running for an elected school board. I support an elected school board. The day
did
after
the commercial, she, I think she made did a commercial around it.
Puts it in her first and only commercial. The moment she comes into his office, he's got a speech. I mean, he's like going on a first date excited, you know, about his number one thing is to tell her why the elected school board is bad. Because he thinks that it's too much politics and education and blah, 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 which is incidentally not an illegitimate or crazy argument. It's something that's worthy of some discussion at least. And she knew this as well. She knows the negatives to a school board. She doesn't really need him to. And she listens to him for a moment and she says, oh, I don't want that.
That's it.
That's it. And so she drops the elected school board. And, you know, the Chicago Teachers Union does not give up the fight for an elected school board. They spend the next 2 years advocating for it in Springfield.
How'd that turn out?
She ended up not doing very much to counteract it. She never gave an honest opinion that, you know, why it's bad. And then she ended up calling the governor and yelling at him saying, you need to veto this legislation. And the governor didn't really like the legislation either. You know, he thought that the school board was too big. He had his own issues with it, but he said, that's not my fight. That's your fight and you lost. And that was the end of it. But that's a really great story into what Lori Lightfoot was like as a candidate and where she really screwed up her argument.
I wanted to talk about the book, but you brought it up. You're an investigative reporter for the Chicago Tribune. Let's talk about your book. It's why you're here. I want to know if Dorval's going to make it. I'm thinking about doing Accountability Mondays in my home so that my wife can be, you know, honest with me.
Everybody needs an Accountability Monday or an accountability buddy. The issue is that if... And this is a reference, Mayor Lightfoot would bring in police brass to have a meeting every Monday, and then it became Accountability Tuesdays. And she would bring them in, and Rahm used to do this too, and he'd bring two or three people at the high level And she would bring in 25 people and figure out who she's going to try to embarrass next in front of all their friends and coworkers, which is why it didn't work. So if your wife is going to criticize you, make sure you bring the neighbors.
She'll bring the dog. But Accountability Mondays is a name of a chapter. I have all my notes broken down into chapters. There is so much. Early successes, where she talked to President Obama. After Accountability Mondays is All Is Not Forgotten. I mean, these are all really potent pieces of things that happened that we knew about and also a lot of detail that we didn't. Accountability Monday specifically interests me because it has to do, again, with policing. You said something really interesting in your interview with Laura Washington about the book that you just wrote, Cities Up for Grabs, How Lori Lightfoot Led and Lost a City in Crisis. And that is that if Lori Lightfoot had replaced David Brown, she might have been reelected. This is fascinating to me for a couple of reasons. We were talking about trust before the break. She held Eddie Johnson close. She threw him under the bus. She held David Brown close. He caught a lot of flack after the fact. Accountability Mondays, you talk also about Charlie Beck. All these guys have different views on what policing is. There's a specific quote from Charlie Beck, which is, if you're not very specific, I'm butchering the quote, butcher paper, another reference. If you're not very specific with the department about what you want, then they're going to mess it up either on purpose or by accident. And this is really interesting to me for a couple reasons. One, she's the police reform candidate. Seems pretty straightforward what it is she would want. Two, she's a hard-edged prosecutor who's very direct and abrasive with people. How could she have been wishy-washy? How could anyone misinterpret what her wishes are to the degree that she went through three technical heads of the police department? That was a really long question.
Well, you know, she inherited Superintendent Eddie Johnson from Rahm Emanuel. He was always going to go in the fall. He was going to go with a hero's welcome. They had an understanding. And then he fucked it up by going to Ceres, which is a satanic bar that none of you should ever go to.
I do want to point out, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Greg. I'm sorry to interrupt you, Greg Pratt. But you say in your book that you're like, I didn't know what Ceres was. Look me in the eye, Greg Pratt. You're a reporter who works downtown and you've never been to Ceres? Who's been to Ceres while Greg thinks about his answer? This guy knows what I'm talking about. Okay, so not a lot of folks in the audience. What you do is you go to Ceres and you ask for a whiskey and ginger. And they give you a glass of whiskey this big and they open a ginger ale within 30 yards of your whiskey. And that's your whiskey ginger. That's basically it. So Eddie Johnson got into trouble there, but Greg never heard of the place. So go on, Greg.
One of the people present here is Chicago Bars on Twitter, and I'm not going to out them directly. It's not Pat. It's not Pat. But they're going to fuck me up later because I haven't gone to Ceres, you know? So it's I have gone since. But I remember actually I called one of Mayor Lightfoot's top people when Superintendent Johnson passes out in the car and everyone talking about what he had been doing and what he had not been doing. And I said, I hear he was at Ceres. And they said, have you ever been to Ceres? I said, no. They said, well, that's where you go when you want to get really fucked up. And so that was where Superintendent Johnson was that night. And so I think your question was why we should all go to Ceres tomorrow.
If you've never been, I will gladly meet you at any time.
But she ended up running through three people. She inherited one superintendent who made a big boo-boo.
Well, Charlie Beck said, if you're not direct and very direct and, you know, if you don't tell people what you want, you're not going to get it. How did she's known as a prosecutor who didn't get along with people and was too upfront about what she wanted. How did this happen?
Well, it's easy to criticize a big institution like the Chicago Police Department. It's big. It's easy to criticize a big institution like Chicago Public Schools, where you say, what do I want? I want a police department where bad guys get arrested, good guy, nobody gets shot, and everybody is happy and healthy and the communities are safe and everybody respects each other. That's really easy to say. In the same way, it's like, I want a school district where everybody is happy, healthy, fully fed, The teachers are all great and blah, 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 blah.
And love apples.
And love apples, you know. And that's a lot harder to do in practice. And so Mayor Lightfoot didn't have a clear, specific vision for the Chicago Police Department other than don't abuse anyone's civil rights, go get the bad guys. But she didn't have any sort of clear strategy. So she brings in a guy named Charlie Beck, as you mentioned, who was really well-respected across
police.
The country, amongst police,
yeah.
and even some police reform people. But
really?
You know, yeah, some.
Okay. Well, you wrote the book, but he's not a broken windows guy.
He is not a broken windows guy.
Okay.
He's not. David Brown is more of a broken windows guy. And so Charlie has a certain amount of respect and history and a presence about him. And then they bring in David, and Charlie is talking about we need to elevate reform to the same level as the first deputy. And then David comes in, and he's like, first thing we're doing is a shock and awe. We're rounding people up. And, you know, that's how do you go from one strategy to the other? It's because you don't actually have an idea.
Another thing that Beck got rid of was, is it merit-based promotions?
Which is a misnomer.
And David Brown brought it back. Now, why is that a misnomer?
Well, merit promotion is a thing in CPD where the idea is somewhat good. And the idea is we don't have enough black and brown people, black and Latinos, becoming white shirts, you know, sergeants, lieutenants, captains. So we're going to, and part of that is the test. And, you know, the test isn't fair. The test is biased, whatever. Fine, you know, that's the case. So how do you address that? And what they decided at one point was, you know, the police officials can make recommendations and of somebody that they think has promise, which is also an idea that doesn't sound bad, except people were recommending their buddies. They were recommending people that they were dating. They were recommending people that TV anchors were recommending, which is not the appropriate place. Like, you know, I'm not a TV anchor, but I'm a media person. And, you know, if Mayor Johnson or Larry Snelling called and said, what do you think of this guy? Should he be a white shirt? I'd say, holy shit, this could be a great paragraph in my book.
One of my final questions is what didn't make the book, but the implication here is that it's not based on who's a good officer. It's political.
Yes.
It's cosmetic.
Which becomes a problem because healthy institutions have growth advancement. They have, so, you know, if you work hard, you will get rewarded in some way. If you fuck up, you will be disciplined and in a way that is fair, right? That is, if you were 15 minutes late, Lori Lightfoot isn't going to send you a Jack Nicholson-style email, you know? Somebody's going to talk to you, but it's not going to be office time. If you kill someone, you're probably going to get fired, you know? These are progressive levels. That's true for any organization, is you have to have these three basic type of cultural things. And some of these institutions didn't have them, and there you go.
What are those three things again?
Advancement and a culture of, if you work well, oh, he's taking notes. discipline that is fair when you mess up, but, you know, when you mess up, the point of messing up is that somebody teaches you how to not mess up.
That's
and
two.
And that fixes it. And then when you really mess up or when you're an asshole, they get rid of you, and that's three. And these are three things that are hard to get. And I'd forgotten my thought, but when it comes to the merit pay, that really messes with all three of those things because you're saying, well, somebody liked Greg because they went out to series and Greg made a funny, so let's make him a captain. That doesn't work.
Or the Wiener Circle. I also think, you just gave it away right there. You know, we're talking about merit-based promotion. We're talking about merit-based pay increases. That, of course, goes along with promotions, and I know that because I've never been promoted. So the NATO conference lessons tie into... So the chapter we just talked about basically had to do with the types of policing, Pop the Weasel. After that is City is Up for Grabs. This is where the title comes from. If you've seen any or read any of the interviews that Greg has done about this book, they ask him right away, why the name? Let me see if I can get this right, Greg. Mayor Lori Lightfoot was texting with a lot of alders on a night when there was a lot of unrest, or call it what you will. Rosana Rodriguez Sanchez reached out to Lori Lightfoot directly and said, I have people downtown who are not looting, who are not guilty of any crime, and they need to get out of the city. And, of course, the bridges had been raised. Anyone remember that? I do. And she said, tell them to go north and west. The city's up for grabs. Do I have that right?
That was an admirably succinct summary.
I'll be promoted yet. Oh, you're all very, very kind. But there are NATO conference lessons in there. There's OEMC, which I really want to get into. But again, what comes out is that Mayor Lightfoot is dealing with a situation that is unprecedented among Chicago mayors, and she does not react well with a lot of other alders. I don't know that it is a hit piece, because many times you've said that this book is about the way Chicago government works. And to me, this book is a reflection and a study in leadership and the way that decisions affect and have a ripple effect on many, many millions of people.
I need to take notes on that.
You gonna need a pen? I got two. Because after that comes the Italians chapter. Now, here's where it gets good. Okay, see, so have you read the book? Or do we just all remember? I don't know if you caught the sign out front, but it had to do with, I would say, double entendre at most. Because obviously, Mayor Lightfoot is a prosecutor and very vulgar. This is not unique among Chicago mayors, however. Why the focus on this one specifically vulgar mayor, Greg?
Because I was picking on her.
Joking.
There's my confession. Because she's the mayor I covered, you know? It's like if I covered the last year of Rahm, you know, and I would have reported on some of his stuff, too.
And you were beat for both. In fact, you talk about when you were the beat reporter and you realized, when I mentioned Carol Marine earlier, you knew that when she was in the building, something big was up. And that happened to be the day when Rahm said, I am not going to get into the race.
That was when Burke was raided.
When Burke was raided. See, I mean, there's so much good stuff in the book.
Butcher paper.
I can't keep it all straight. I do love, but it's probably my favorite chapter. So my point is, you were a beat reporter in that building. We've talked about how good sourcing and things of that nature. But, you know, COVID probably changed all of that for you. I'm double parked. There's a heron. That's it. Not on the podcast, you don't. You got to come to the live show. What else?
Weren't you going to ask me about the wiener?
Oh, yeah. So it's funny, because that is actually not something I have very good notes on, if you couldn't tell from my segue, because it is kind of complicated about how that quote came to be. The chunk of the book where you talk about where she got to the very vulgar paragraph where she asserts that her private parts are larger than those of anyone else in the city, including Italian folks. This had to do with the Columbus statue. That's about as much as I know. And I'm Irish. Can you establish... Where did that quote come from specifically? I mean, this is later on in her tenure. She's under a lot of pressure in a lot of different ways.
So she was angry because there were negotiations going on to return the Columbus statue to an Italian-American civic group, and they were going to put it in a parade, and she got really angry with the Park District for negotiating this. And a smart politician and a smart mayor would have sent their chief of staff to say, we're not giving up the statue. Statue stays where it is. End of discussion. Mayor Lightfoot was really worked up, so she calls a Zoom. I think it was either Sunday night or Monday night, so she's probably watching football, which is what she loves. She's probably worked up. She's like, I'm going to be Brian Urlacher meets Joe Pesci. And she brings them into this meeting, and she lights them up. And the problem there, you know, I just said it, right? Is that's not a phone call that the mayor needs to be on. You know, Mayor Johnson does not need to personally chew out the lawyer for the Park District. He does not have to personally chew out the lawyer for CPS. He doesn't have to personally chew out the lawyer for city colleges. That was a choice she made that just got her into a lot of trouble and made her look kind of silly. It was a waste of her time, and it was a real reflection of not managing. And, you know, I hear all sorts of stuff about City Hall under Mayor Johnson. I do not hear that type of stuff, because he's smart enough not to involve himself with, you know, he can yell at the head of CPS. He can yell at the head of the Park District. But the lawyers? What's wrong with you?
I wish I knew. You're talking to my, I'm sorry. One of the things, a lesson I also take away from the book is that you're supposed to listen to people who are smarter than you. Shout out to my producers who have been trying to catch my peripheral vision for the last 7 minutes, telling me to end the interview because they are smarter than me. But just a couple quick quotes before we go. One, who said this, Greg? We want the organization to focus on putting a winning team on the field, beating the Packers, and finally being relevant past October.
Daily.
Lori Lightfoot.
Honestly, are you sure?
There you go. I do my research, wow. Greg. I do my research. Here's another, and this is, I told you the interview would be funny, but I'm wrapping up, so bear with me. Given the exacting standards that the state's attorney has for charging a case, which is proof beyond a reasonable doubt, when those charges are brought, these people are guilty. And of course, they're entitled to a presumption of innocence. Of course, they're entitled to their day in court, but residents in our community are also entitled to safety from dangerous people, so we need to keep pressing the criminal courts to lock up violent, dangerous people. Greg?
Well, I was going to joke that that's Harold, but that's actually one of my... I remember I was listening to Mayor Lightfoot, and I used to listen to every press conference, every radio interview, every whatever, for something new. And she was doing this press conference, and she goes up there, and she's doing her usual spiel about criminal justice and the system, which is fine. I've heard it a lot, you know, but she's on her talking points. And then she says, and by the way, if you're charged with a crime, you're guilty, which is...
The police reform candidate, ladies and gentlemen.
Which is outrageous. Period. And so I was the only reporter that picked up on it. I was like, did she really say that? And I wrote the story, and there was the thing where you had a spate of police suicides because they were being overworked. And I asked her about the fact that they were having all their days canceled. And she said, you know, there's this perception that we're overworking them, but they have plenty of days off in their contract, which is not true. They were working like 60 days, not seeing their families, and there were these tragic results. But the trick, and you were asking about my report trick, is you actually listen to what people say, and then you put it out there. And if you're charged with a crime, you're guilty was absolutely batshit. But this other stuff happened too, and that's for all the reporters out there, especially Jake, you have to pay attention to what people say.
Fancy that, showing up to arguments and discussions with facts and things that actually happened. That's amazing. This is really the denouement. We have to go. I appreciate everyone's patience, physically listening or digitally listening. I'll have two yes or no's for you after this. You were raised in Little Village in Chicago to believe in politeness and civility. It's something that's sorely lacking in political discourse in this country, locally and nationally, maybe even worldwide. Shout out Vladimir Putin, not a friend of the show. What hope do you have for this type of conversation, of showing up to conversations with facts and that being a thing people enjoy and like to see in their political discourse?
I'm concerned.
Well, all right, so here are the other two yes or no questions. ShotSpotter remains, yes or no?
No.
Legislative body does not have executive power. Greg Pratt. Dorval Carter lasts the year. Yes or no?
Yes.
The guy knows where the money is, federal money. It was yes or no, Greg. Last question. Should people buy The City Is Up for Grabs, How Lori Lightfoot Led and Lost a City in Crisis?
Yes.
I want to thank everyone here, the Wiener Circle, Wes Needham, Greg Pratt, all of you. Thank you for listening. Have a good evening.
Good Evening's live shows are produced by Wes Needham and Pat Whalen and recorded all over Chicago. The Good Evening podcast is produced by Princess Sims in partnership with Retriever. Sound mix by Dane Dickman. Artwork by Chance Bone. Our desk was made by Andrew Swanson, and our musical theme is produced by Gramps the Vamp. Have a good evening.